Welcome back to Startup Conversations with Louisville Entrepreneurs. It's a weekly conversation with somebody who's out there making a difference in a startup company or an entrepreneurial venture. We like to hear their stories and their successes and failures so every one of us can learn from what they're doing and apply these lessons to our own ventures and our own projects. This week, we welcome in Jeffrey Fader, Jeff, whichever he prefers, from The Monstro. He comes to Louisville via Canada with his partner, Terry Gertz, and he gives us kind of the lowdown on big data and how that is revolutionizing the music business, and they watch these trends. And as a person who's really kind of worked in the radio and records business for a long time, I'm fascinated by this stuff because you can collect this real-time data of what people are listening to and sharing regardless of the genre of the music. And you, what they've done is they've mashed it up into these new charts. And Billboard Magazine, Dick Clark, and the rest of the top 40 guys have a new source for where to find what's hot, what's popular, what the kids are doing these days. And it's at themonstro.com, and it's really cool. And these guys are doing totally interesting things with big data, which a lot of people don't find as interesting, but they mash it into this cool product that is going to make a difference in the radio and records business. We talk about the path to Louisville, how they came to be here, and their experience out in Silicon Valley, and the music business itself, and talk a little bit about Canada. It's a great talk that we have, and certainly hope you enjoy it. I try to post these things every week on Tuesdays. Sometimes I'm late. I have a long list of guests that I want to welcome into the studio and a lot of stuff coming up, and I want to really, I've said this before, but I really got to try to make the scene and shake and howdy with you guys who are making a difference every day in your own companies and just talking one-on-one, and I've been known to drink beer every now and then, so perhaps I'll buy you one. I'm not sure where you pick up the Startup Podcast. I recommend Stitcher, the app. We're on it. You can get their app in the iPod Marketplace. Is that what they call it? I'm not an Apple guy. In the Google Play Store, you can get it for Palm devices, my HP touchpad. It's an award-winning app. They have news and talk radio for mobile phone and mobile devices. Stitcher Radio is smart radio. I recommend you pick it up because you show up and I can count you. And that's what I like. Speaking of big data, here we go. Enjoy the talk with Jeff Fader of The Monstro. So did you do the thing at the Hogan's Fountain last Friday?
I did.
Was that awesome? Like, was there a cool vibe there that?
Yeah, it was pretty good. I was just thinking about it. I was like, I was trying to remember. It's like, crap, was that just Friday? Yeah, I think there was probably 60-ish, 70
wow.
people out. Like, it was a bigger crowd than I thought was going to come out. And then there might have been even more than that. I don't know. I'm terrible with those sorts of things.
Well, I'm jumping ahead a little bit in my line of questioning.
Okay.
But does that surprise you that there's that much of a scene where you can have 60 people show up on a Friday evening to?
It was more that it was a Friday evening and people.
Oh, okay.
And it was hot. Right, and people came out, and I think we had 40 people out for startup drinks. So,
all right,
there's stuff going on. It's just a matter of spreading the word properly.
I think there is stuff going on, and I didn't necessarily. The reason I started doing this was because I've never done anything on my own. Uh-huh. I mean, I have tons of ideas,
yeah.
But I love the concept of audio on demand podcasting.
Yeah.
And I started listening to a lot more. I'm like, well, I can do a podcast, but what would I do the podcast about? And I'm interested in this stuff. And then it occurred to me that I just know a lot of people that are doing it.
Right.
I've just met you, but that's because you came recommended by people who were, so it's, I've just.
No taste.
Come on. So I've just kind of fallen back into this
cool
buzz about town. And I think this is the real news of the city.
Yeah.
To me, you know, if I turn on the news, I get the crime report and the traffic
yeah.
report. And but this, you know, you guys are making things happen. So
good.
Tell me about just, you know, the proverbial elevator pitch for The Monstro.
The Monstro. So the Monstro is big data for entertainment. So we mine social networks and we look for mentions of different media. So our biggest thing right now is music, and that's getting the most visibility. So we'll track anybody that shared a song, whether it's come out of something like Spotify or YouTube, or it's just something that somebody's mentioned an artist, and we pick it up and we run analytics behind that. And so we provide,
So they don't have to hit the, share button.
My leg's right there. I keep shrinking myself down.
So you don't have to hit the share button in order for it to.
Yeah, you do. You have to tweet about it. And then if you do, that's when we pick it up. So we have 100% Twitter connection. We get every tweet that comes across Twitter, and then we process it. So we process a huge amount of data. To do that.
It's interesting because I, you know, work for Cox Media Group.
Right.
We're sitting in a radio studio.
Yep.
And our business is rapidly changing.
Mm-hmm.
Where does all this come from? Are you a music fan? Are you a social media fan? Are you a data fan? Like, how did all of this come into, what gave you this idea?
Well, this idea, like most startups, evolved. So my partner Terry and I started Parkview, which is the real name of the company, about 4.5 years ago. We were looking at data ubiquity. So we were looking at the impact of cloud computing and mobile and everything else, and thinking about how do people get their data when there are multiple devices and everything coming around. And this sounds sort of really obvious and retrospect at the time, though not a lot of people were thinking about it. Dropbox hadn't launched, for example.
Mm-hmm.
The iPhone wasn't even out, or just out. And Android didn't
exist. I love the Canadian accent. I love it.
So we started there, and then we built a prototype that would share pictures, because we were really working on how can we make it just painfully or painlessly simple to move stuff. So we embedded right into the operating system. We let you share pictures that way. And we ran that for a little while, and we were all excited about it. And then one of our early investors had us meet a portfolio company that was in the video on demand space.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were talking about these really exotic things we could do around sort of like a DVR on your mobile device, basically. So you could subscribe to different shows, and they'd be automatically sent down to you. And for people that commute or,
I would pay for that.
Right. So
I would.
So moving big files in chunks, that's really sort of our bread and butter around metadata. And so it was kind of an exciting conversation, as these tend to be. And the VP of engineering for that company came in and sort of cut to the chase and said, that's all well and good, but if you could just make it that I don't have to carry, this is going back 4 years.
Yeah.
So my BlackBerry and my iPod to the gym, that'd be a win, because I'm always carrying my BlackBerry and I could ditch my iPod. This is just as RIM is launching their app store on April 1st. Not a good day to launch your app store, by the way.
Joke's on them.
Exactly. Very foretelling.
And I'm a Windows phone guy, and look, I have somebody to laugh at.
There you go. So anyhow, so that got us into the music space. And the more we got into the music space, both Terry and I are fans of data. I've built a couple of data companies now, and
fans of data. That was the question. I said, what are you a fan of? And you said
back.
Data. Yeah, how about that?
And the more we got into music, the more it's you can say it's got problems or it's ripe for changes. And
you mean the music business?
The music business itself. And,
yeah. Oh, it's got problems.
It's got.
Yeah.
But where there's problems, there's opportunities.
Yeah,
and
you betcha.
There's people doing interesting things right now. And it's in my opinion, not as bad as it was a few years ago. Mm. It's actually whether that's innovation has caused change in it and opened people's eyes to it, or people are just more willing. Like maybe it just seems inevitable that change is going to happen, but people are more willing to experiment, and there's more data, and the value of data is all sort of timely right now. Right?
Do you consider yourself in the music business then?
No, I think really we consider ourselves in sort of the data business. We don't actually do anything with music. That's a topic we follow and build information about. So I think at a time we were, going back 2 years ago, we probably were.
I mean, Billboard magazine tracked data. They collected it differently,
mm-hmm.
and then they reported the data, and they are still in business after how many years?
Yeah.
And radio and records, it can rest in peace. But same sort of mentality. So, right. I mean, there's stuff there. There's information that people are interested in.
Right. And when Donna Summer passed away, that was our most recent dealing with Billboard. They came to us and said, how did the Twitter sphere react to her?
Did it?
It did.
Okay.
And in fact, about
weird because nobody's paid attention to her for long.
Yeah. I can tell you, her music was being shared like once every 4 hours prior to that. That was sort of steady state.
Oh, wow.
And then
that's even surprising.
And then it just goes on a cliff. We've got the infographic up on the site and people find out about it. Obviously, word spread before it was publicly available. And it's way up before even TMZ breaks it.
Did the Call Me Maybe thing, like, that, I'm 40.
Yeah.
It went right over my head. And uh-huh. But that just seemed to be everywhere.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah.
And you can track that sort of thing?
We
call it a heat seeker in Billboard.
Right.
You know?
Right.
With a bullet. Number one with a bullet.
Or Gaudier. We can go back to the very first share of Gaudier. Right? It's sort of like, we think about it as a disease spread.
Well, they don't call it viral for
exactly, nothing. But it's true. It goes like that. Madonna, the Super Bowl track that she did with MIA, and drawing a blank.
I want Van Halen to play every halftime show. Kiss, it'd be great.
Yeah, we saw that break in Brazil and Gum Across, so we can see stuff like that. It's very, very interesting.
Okay,
so
you are kind of in the music business.
Well, we are.
You don't. Yeah. Business would imply that there's some sort of relationship with a record label or radio or something. And
we provide data to labels. We provide data to streaming companies.
Is that your revenue stream then? Like that's your
right.
That's the ball game.
Yeah.
All right.
So if you look, we start to see stuff 6-8 weeks before it ends up on a Billboard Heat Seeker chart. So if you want to know what's going on. You can go in and take a look.
You need to start selling to radio stations, man.
Happy to.
You do. I'm the right guy to talk to.
All right.
Look where we're sitting. Yeah, because I have all the influence, and it's gigantic. I mean, now, how long have you been doing this, then? It's like
we've been doing the company for 4.5 years. Well, what's this? Like Parkview?
The Monstro.
The Monstro's been... The bits and pieces of Monstro has been around for about 3.5 years, and then Monstro as an actual consumer, or not consumer, but as a product.
A public-facing
thing, we launched in December.
Okay, so very recent.
Yeah.
So music with me kind of popped up as I was doing my research. What's the story with that?
So Music with Me was the answer to the VP of engineering, can I just leave my iPod behind?
Okay.
So it was a way that you can wirelessly sync, and it was the first way you could wirelessly sync an iTunes library to a mobile device. So we did that on BlackBerry first, then we did Android, then we did Nokia devices, and I think we even had a Windows Phone prototype.
Hey now, I'm ready. Speaking my language.
And then what really started to happen was the commodification of that type of functionality. So.
Okay.
Amazon Cloud launch, Cloud Player,
mm-hmm.
Google Music, iTunes, Match, and so on. So really the play with Music With Me was to go and be able to understand consumer behavior with music. That was the whole concept behind it. So get it to the point like a Google model where the consumers are using a product in exchange for data.
Okay.
And what happened with things like the advent of Twitter opening up their API or Tumblr opening up their APIs to full-fledged pieces is that we don't need a consumer in the middle to do that type of data. So we're still interested in delivering, social recommendations and charts and things back to a consumer, but we don't actually need a relationship with the consumer to do that. So we still support it. Still runs in, I think, 100-plus countries right now for Music With Me. So it's still around, just not where we focus our efforts.
Are you a programmer or what's the background here? We've talked a lot about data.
I think everybody in the company writes code. I didn't go to school for that. I went to school for human bio, with ergonomics and human factors, and then started down the path of a master's in architecture. And,
okay.
But in the middle of that, I worked as a NSERC summer student.
You ever heard of Ball State University architecture program?
Yes, I have.
That's
there you go.
That's my school, man.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'm not an architecture person, but they were right across the street from the broadcasting building. Yeah.
You were in buildings.
I was friends with them. They had great parties.
Architects like
yeah, that. It was great.
It's a hard.
We were used to staying up all night.
Exactly. Exactly. So in the middle of all that, I became a research student, and I had always been interested in programmed and
okay.
sort of stepped away from it. And then I came back as a summer student working as a research assistant. We were making three-dimensional models from bone scans. So long story short, had to take basically CAT scans and film. So I'm your age, so we didn't have digitized three-dimensional mm-hmm. CAT scanners. We had flat film. Put that out into a three-dimensional model, so plot it on a giant plotter, and then try to build a three-dimensional model from there to look at this bone. So I'm like, oh, this is kind of interesting. And then I went and started doing architecture, which was taking three-dimensional pieces and putting it on two-dimensional planes. Huh. I'm like, this is kind of goofy.
Yeah.
And then went back into computing. And then
so you just lost interest in that other stuff then?
Well, it was interesting, but I went out with my advisor, and we were in Italy. So Syracuse University has a program where you can go to Florence, Italy.
Okay.
And so I was there, and one night I was with him, and he's like, oh, man, architecture's terrible, right?
It's oh, just, man, he laid down the truth.
Yeah, he's like, you know, and I was kind of fighting him on it. He's like, look, if it was that great, would I be sitting here with you? You know, like, yeah, you make an interesting point. So, but it was, I was already having, like, it's cool, and I like it, but it's a really tough life, and you got to love it to do it, and I didn't love it, so.
Okay, well, there's a huge lesson there.
Yeah.
I mean— how many people, and I talk about this all the time, have an idea for something, and they're just begrudgingly going to their day job, and they just because it pays them a check or it does something in their life that mm-hmm. serves a purpose. But man, if they could just do what they love to do, if they just do what they're interested in doing. So what had you? How did you make that jump then? Did you?
I went back. I was working loosely and. I was doing a little bit of consulting work with Apple on weird projects, and
they don't really have normal projects, do they?
No, this is going back to like when they were dabbling with Apple TV,
okay.
the very, very precursor of Apple TV, like way back.
Hmm.
And so that was kind of interesting. So I just sort of went back and stepped back into that life, and then I worked a little bit with a company that had an architectural CAD program, which seemed like best of both worlds, and then ended up actually sort of more like selling in that mode. And then I went and I worked on a research project, and that's where I really got deeply back into it. So we did things like we built the simulator that taught the astronauts how to unpack the International Space Station arm, Canada arm thing. So we did really strange projects, and that's really what sort of ignited it is like, okay, these are crazy stuff that you just don't get to do.
No. Well, so, how does somebody doing all that crazy stuff you don't get to do end up in Louisville? I mean, how did you?
So I was working for the research project, and like any good research project, it was funded to a date and ended. And we were actually thinking about my wife and I moving down to California at the time in the Valley. This was the big like dot-com rush.
Sure.
And some friends have moved down.
There's like, a new one happening right here, right now.
There you go. and so anyhow, the client that I'd worked with on the research project said, why don't you just come out and talk to us and then, you know, help us sort of figure out where we should go from there. And then I went there and there was a bunch of them and they said, what would it take for you to work with us on this other project? And I threw out what I thought was a stupid number, and it turns out it wasn't stupid enough.
Oh, no.
And
oh.
So I became basically a custom software guy.
Okay.
And then that got me another job, and then I worked with, like, Alan Bradley on a bunch of their automation products and started to see
You've done a lot of stuff for a 40-year-old guy.
Yeah, it's like dog years, right?
So, yeah, yeah.
So then started seeing the same project over and over again, and the same sort of problems. People trying at that point, it was people trying to get more value out of their Salesforce casting systems. ERP was the big thing, and data manipulation from one to the other, and not having it wait like 4 weeks before your salesperson was back in the office to get your forecast for manufacturing. So how could you shrink inventory levels and things like that? So that was my first startup. So we threw a little bunch of goofballs together, and probably not the best plan. At one point, we had 22 people working out of our house. So
house
with a 6 week old in the house. Yeah,
oh, man.
And one bathroom for those people.
That's bold.
It was but anyway, so that was my first startup, and then did a second startup.
What year was this?
That would have been, I think we started that one in 1996.
Okay.
No, that's not right. That's when I started consulting. So we started that one, I think, in 1999.
Okay.
And then sold it in 2001. And then...
After the bubble burst?
Yeah.
After or before?
After, as it was coming down. Not good. Again, not good. Timing's everything.
That was, you live and learn.
But it got to be pretty big. It was like 60 people, and it was a sizable beast. And then when I did, one of the VCs that was in that one had me meet them in a Starbucks and said, hey, here's your next company. And we built this financial services company that looked at automating commercial loans. And then 5 years of that one, and I started to get bored of hopping on a plane, having the same conversation with security and architecture groups and banks. Mm-hmm. It's not that it's a bad thing. It was fun. But after a while, it's like a...
Repetitive.
Okay. It was a little bit.
You got to feed your soul.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the real kicker was one time I went to one and they said, we haven't made the business case for this, so we can't actually ask you any questions, but we have the next 4 hours. If you'd like to tell us anything, just start talking. Yeah, I was like, okay,
for 4 hours.
I'm done.
Wow.
So anyways, I was working on a standard and I did that. But long story short, started working with Terry in a semantic startup and that was doing semantic search, trying to do knowledge representation, and was doing knowledge representation. And
so
we were.
So you got hooked up with him just in the natural course of business?
I hired him, actually. He interviewed at the company. And then we ended up working as consultants at a social analytics company called PostRank. So helping them sort of go from literally two guys to they got a lot of coverage and suddenly were an overnight success, but literally an overnight success. So we worked together on that and then decided to do something on our own after that. So Terry.
And where are you living at this point?
Waterloo, Ontario.
Okay.
So we're both from that area. And then, but the connection is Terry married, he went to Western Kentucky on a track scholarship.
Okay.
Married a woman from Bowling Green.
Oh, so, that's how we all get stuck here.
It is true.
No offense, Kentuckians. I grew up in Indiana. So. Right across. Yeah, I'm so different.
Right. That water makes a huge difference.
Yeah.
So anyways, this is turning into a really long story, but point was Canadian venture capital industry collapsed. It fell apart. And
in what year?
This would have been, 4 years ago. Really.
Okay.
It started to go before that, but it just never came back. And the government changed some rules that made it less advantageous for LPs to invest in Canadian venture capital companies. It's doing better now, but at that point it was a ghost town and it was just a bad time to fund a startup. So we started looking around at other places. We went to Boulder. We looked at Boston. We never went there, but we considered it. Looked at Austin and a few others in the Valley. And then we got into a accelerator in the Valley. Called Plug and Play. And literally on our way down, I missed a crucial piece. While we're in Boulder, somebody introduced us to a guy named Richard Stump in Lexington. So he heard that Terry had a connection to Kentucky and said, okay. Oh, yeah, you know, there's actually some stuff going on. So Richard introduced us to Bobby Ferrari at GLI.
Mm-hmm.
And on our way down to Sunnyvale, California, we took the natural path of coming through Louisville, Kentucky.
Yeah.
Spent a couple days here, and we met some investors, and sort of the next thing we knew, we were like, okay, well, we'll expand and open an office here. And we went back and forth like five times, I think, during 3 months.
Was it the entrepreneurial environment of Louisville that attracted you and the people you spoke with, or was it the city itself? Like, because the city is attractive to a lot of people.
Yeah, it was a combination. So, I mean, it was comparing it against Boulder at the time, right? So Boulder was the sort of the front runner. So half to quarter the price of living.
I heard people don't shower in Boulder.
There are streets, yeah.
Okay.
But no, Boulder's a great, great place as well. But our problem was the main VC there had a conflict in his portfolio.
Okay.
So it really, it was kind of a pipe dream that we were going to live there. But it was the same sort of dynamics as far as I was concerned. There was capital looking to help startups, looking to actively engage with them. There were, Boulder probably is ahead of us in terms of available talent. But you also pay for that talent differently than you pay here.
Okay.
But there were pockets of stuff that just surprised me. Like a lot of people have no idea that Coke has a large development office here.
No. See? Didn't know that.
But they do. And, you know, there's far more going on here than we ever think about, probably. And so it's when you start. So very quickly we got connected in the community. Very quickly we met people who, you know, really wanted to make it so we could be successful here. And, you know, that was pretty. And then the city's, I mean, it's a really easy city to live in.
Right? I think so.
And we both have kids. Which is fortunate. So, you know, it's like a pretty comfortable place that your kids can live and, you know, so it's all.
With very little threat of bodily harm.
Yeah.
But yeah, I grew up in a small town. I grew up in Madison up the river. So. Mm-hmm. Talk about safe. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we were Canada, right? We're going to apologize and everything. But
you get blamed for everything.
We do. That's true.
Yeah. It's all your fault.
No. So, yeah. So the next thing we knew, we were here and a bunch of people helping us out, getting us funded. And we set what we thought was like a reasonable threshold of if we're going to actually open an office here, this is what it's going to have to look like.
And okay.
That happened pretty quickly. So, and then in 2 weeks from that happening, we were living here.
Okay.
So it was fast.
You mentioned earlier you work with companies with the Monstro. Is this something that's supporting itself at this point, or how is it funded?
It is funded through investors. So it's, I think it's all reasonably public. So we've raised about $2 million into the company now. Okay. And a lot of that is there's a ton, although it sounds really simple to go from a tweet to a song or to a TV show, there's a lot of technology that goes through that lets you understand the context of that tweet and then identify it in a catalog and then be able to store it in a way that you can then say, you know, find me all the people who shared Madonna, who live in Louisville, who are 25 to 34 years old, who also shared Justin Bieber, right?
Wow.
And so
that's a person I don't want to meet. I'm just.
He's Canadian. I got to plug him.
Okay. I do like the Bryan Adams.
There we go.
I'm getting way off topic here. We could sit and talk about music all day long.
Perfect. But anyways, it takes a lot of pieces to make that happen. So, and that takes a lot of cash.
Okay. I mean, you have a plan in place. Mm-hmm. Is there a ultimate scenario here where that you're shooting for?
Well, as soon as you build a company that has taken investment, you're committed to one of three outcomes, right? You're either going to drive it into the ground, hopefully not. You're going to sell it for some price, or you're going to take it public. And it's most likely the acquisition piece. We're not
okay
shaped up, nor do I think we'd ever want to be a public company, but we'd like to be acquired by a public company.
Sure.
And so we're looking to build, you know, key differentiated technology that would be advantageous to anyone who wants to find people like that or wants to power an ad network or a whole bunch of different pieces. That's the ultimate
ad network. That's a very popular concept, obviously, around here. I mean, we work in advertising. Mm-hmm. And the targeting capabilities that they provide is incredible. When you think of how narrowly you can drill down into somebody's life to know what they're interested in and all that. And how does this apply to, I don't know. How would a radio station use the service?
Well, if you want to, it depends on what you're trying to do, right? So if you're trying to drive your programming off of sort of thought leaders, so what's, you don't want to tap into people who are that 6 to 8 week, who may even be like that Gaudier share happened think it was 8 months before it happened on the chart, right? So, but there's a groundswell, right? There's this pattern. So if you want to sort of tap into those types of things in advance, that's one option. The other one is to better understand the profile of listeners that fit certain genres for certain artists. So what other things are they interested in? What are they doing? Where are they? Where do they check in on Foursquare?
Okay.
All those pieces, right? You can, so the more that you can understand the profile, the better that you guys can target, you know, the advertisers and say, you know, we know that this core audience looks like blah. And I'm sure you can do that now, but this would back it up.
Yeah. It's not necessarily tied in with the product.
Right.
It is, you know, a certain genre of music appeals to a specific demographic and it's sort of generalized. But I mean, the music business is so much different than it was 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
None of this stuff was on the radar. Is this disruptive wave that's rolling through the music business, is that starting to crash, or is this something that's just going to go until music and media is just free to everybody? I mean, because the business model for an artist is so different than it used to be.
Yeah.
They're releasing music to promote a live appearance, and it used to be, you know, I'm going to be in concert so they can sell 5,000 albums in a specific city that week or whatever it is.
Right.
I mean, as somebody who is sort of connected to the music business, do you see this settling down anytime soon?
No. I think we probably have only seen the cusp of the changes we're going to see. I mean, there's a whole bunch of different models and everybody's trying to figure it out. So collectively, you know, there's a general trend towards direct to consumer. So everything you can do, or direct to fan, everything you can do to connect artists to fan, there's a whole bunch of people, whether you are a do-it-yourself artist working out of your house, or you're a major label, they all have these initiatives happening. Then there's a group that have gone their own and sort of gone the Kickstarter, you know, crowd-supported models. There's a whole bunch of innovative, you know, social crowd touring that's happening around, where people are like pre-selling venues and then going to the venue mm-hmm. and saying, hey, I just sold 600 tickets in your city. Do you want the concert, or I'm going to go to
interesting
somebody else? So there's a whole bunch of disruption happening. You know, there's organizations like Live Nation that are putting together really interesting technology that is, you know, really, again, trying to do direct to consumer. There's just so much going on. And then you got things like in the, even just in the straight entertainment space, where people are producing content that's only available through Netflix.
Sure.
Right. Or there's consumers that are now sort of programmed to think about media consumption in a way that's sort of Netflix driven. So we hear a lot of people that want to add like Netflix like functionality to insert media score, whether that's a book, you know, so deliver all the books that, so going beyond Amazon's model, but saying, you know, give me better recommendations than what Amazon's doing.
I saw two people today tweet something about Amazon recommending them something that was ridiculous.
Right.
That would never fit their lifestyle or fit their body. I mean, one guy was tweeting about jeans. Like, why do they think I'm a 105-pound man?
Right. But there's some really good targeting that's coming up that's more data-driven, right? There's been a series of articles in Forbes about, like, the guy that found out his daughter was pregnant before his daughter told him, right? But Target had figured it out. Or people.
I got two girls, man. That hurts my heart.
I've got one. Yeah. Or people who are in the data space, consumer profiling space, who are like being careful about what they put on customer loyalty cards. I mean, we're just at the start, and there's going to be more legislation and privacy concerns. Mm-hmm. There's going to be, you know, somebody who's, you know, there's going to be an artist somewhere that's super smart, that it's not just the OK Goes of the world that have been able to, or Carly Rae Jepsen or anybody else who've been able to sort of skirt the typical.
Well, Louis C.K. did that.
Right. Thing. Exactly. Yeah. I was thinking about him with ticketing. Right. It's like, tell you what, you can just come to my website and buy it. And
yeah.
I don't really
who
need.
Was else? It was. I listened to Jay Moore's podcast because, you know, I like crude humor from time to time and impressions.
Yeah.
I wish I did them better. he had a guy on named Matthew Lillard, and he had made a movie that just was really important to him.
Mm-hmm.
It was not like this movie that he thought would be a broad appeal. And the theaters, of course, they want the big blockbusters. And
sure.
So he's put together this model where you can arrange for a screening in your town. And you let them know what date you want to do, and then you have to go out and you sell the tickets, kind of like the thing.
Yeah.
And then the person who arranged the screening takes 10% of the door, like a 10% commission. And that, I mean, that was revolutionary for me. He's like, oh my gosh.
Right.
And you know, so, why? It makes so much sense.
Yep.
All the way around.
So I think we ain't seen nothing yet, right? I think there's more and more of that. I mean, if you told people, you know, even probably just 2 years ago that, you know, there's going to be an artist who's going to raise $1 million on a website where people just donate money and they may or may not get a product out of it. You know, you'd say it's crazy. And now it's commonplace.
Well, these podcasts run on a few week delay, but like the woman, the bus monitor lady,
right.
She's up over like almost $750,000 the people are giving her.
Right. I mean, there's a whole bunch of people reevaluating.
What a wonderful world. You know? Yeah, I know. Please bully me.
Right.
Let me have it.
You got the camera ready?
I can take it. sort of steering back to the way that you guys have things structured.
Yeah.
You are co-CEO with Terry.
Yeah.
Right? What's that dynamic like? Yeah. How do you do it? How do you make sure you're not walking all over each other?
Well, so we're five people plus two people in California and then other contractors. So unlike a lot of startups in Louisville, we're the opposite. We do all development and we outsource everything else.
Oh, okay.
So there's no shortage of tasks in a startup, and it's really sort of project based and we work well together. And I think it probably causes confusion externally. I don't think it causes too much confusion internally. It's just, this has to get done and somebody just goes and does it. And in reality, we're pretty flat. We have to be. We're five people, right?
Yeah.
So these are the projects we're working on. This is the focus of what's going to get done. We meet every morning and sketch out, like, this is what has to get done. And
every morning?
Every morning.
Hmm. Okay.
Hooray for coffee.
Yeah. This town runs on it.
Yeah.
So did you spell all of that out in some sort of contract before you decided to do this, or is this something you're doing on the fly?
Yeah, something we're doing on the fly. I mean, we started.
That's gutsy.
A year, like the first year, it was just us and occasionally a couple of developers we'd bring in on a project by project basis. So it sort of slid into it, right? I don't think we really thought about it too terribly much, other than it's like we literally rock, paper, scissored for who was going to be president and secretary on the banking documents.
Nice.
Which is an excellent tip if you want to impress your bank manager when you do it in front of them.
yes, I will give you this money. I'll flip a coin, and maybe you will, and maybe.
But I've been involved with enough startups to know that they're fluid organizations, right? That you go and they build at uncomfortable rates, and you add people only when you sort of like are forced to, right? So, didn't really stress about how we were going to organize it. We try to be more.
But you're growing.
We are, and we try to be more partitioned right now, so we kind of manage clients.
Okay.
And projects, and we have kind of naturally things that we're sort of more obviously better at than each other. So, like, presenting is always fun, but I'm terrible at delivering a scripted message. It's awful. There's like CTIA, which is a big wireless organization. We won one of the top wireless companies or promising startups. And so we got this big.
I'd pat you on the back if I could reach.
That's fine. Yeah. We got a nice plaque. but so it's this big production, like complete with HD level production. So that means like makeup, teleprompter. Steve Largent is the, you know, football fame is the head of it, right? And so we have these.
Is that how you pronounce his last name? The French pronunciation? Yeah.
Maybe not, but that's how I do.
Okay.
Because
he was larger to me my entire life.
I could just be slipping into Canadian.
Yeah, could be.
So we had this big, like, it was like three dress rehearsals and the whole deal. And I mean, that just.
It's a production. I mean, yeah, I see what you're.
But I'm not good with that. I'm much better at pop me questions and stuff. And. You know, that, so we sort of know that. It's like, do we have to deliver a scripted message? Okay.
So if I were to have Terry in here, he would want the questions in advance so he could plan?
I don't think that's the case. It's just, yeah, it's just the way we work. It's different. And so, yeah, that's kind of how it goes. And we're just a good overall balance for one another. And
yeah.
There's a lot of, it's like a, startups with partners is like a marriage, right? And it's good and bad, and you're going to have disagreements as you go. And, 4.5 years into it, we've survived. And I think our best outcomes have come from the fact that we can duke it out and still survive.
Right? And still, like each other.
Right. Yeah.
I suppose.
Seriously. And I think that's a common component of really high performance teams is that, it's like you really need to consider who you're working with, because especially in a startup, you are not going to spend more time with anybody else. You're going to see less of your family, and you're going to see more of these people. So you better respect them, and you better be able to, deal with issues, and you better be able to both, if it's more, it's even more complicated, but contribute at some level that it sort of builds it up. So,
and you each are, well, you've already kind of touched on that, good at different things where it's.
There's a lot of overlap.
I think
that's the problem, right? Is why it's harder. It's probably harder. It's not so hard for us, which is really funny, but it's hard for people to understand what we do because we do have a lot of overlap. And you can kind of plug each of us in at different points and you'll have continuity.
Right? Well, you started the company together.
Right.
Rather than this is Jeff's thing, and so you're going to go surround yourself with people who make up for your deficiencies.
Right.
So, which is, if I'm looking from the outside looking in, I'm thinking that's probably the most efficient way to do things.
It usually is, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's just not the way it's shaken out for you then. So.
No.
But you're doing well.
We're doing right? fine.
So what's next? I mean, what's on the roadmap for you guys?
TV's next. That's our next big topic. So rolling, doing what we're doing for movies, or sorry, for music, doing it for TV, and then doing it for movies and doing it for sports. That's sort of our trajectory. That's our summer vacation.
Summer? Oh, it's going to be done by...
Well, parts of it are, yeah, for sure. Whether or not we start demonstrating it externally, it's probably not going to be ready for that piece. But
how do we find you online? You can look at the... I mean, I love looking at themonstro.com mm-hmm. and checking out the charts and seeing, like, today I looked and the Pixies, Where Is My Mind, was trending. I'm like, that is crazy.
Yeah.
Like, how old is that song?
I know.
But I listened to it over the weekend at least twice. It was on my Spotify.
Yep.
It's nuts. Very,
well, and there's different, if you're looking at, so to answer your question, it's themonstro.com is the easiest way to find us.
What about you in particular, though?
And me get in particular? Like,
you're tweeting your genius, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, yeah. well, I'm JFEDOR on Twitter. That's an easy way to find me. Yeah, I was just going to say hourly. So that one thing you're looking at is a real-time trend. So it's like as of now. That's a little bit cached, like probably 10 minutes on our web front. But, there used to be times where you could see, like, it's almost like parts of the world waking up and sharing or world events happening or a couple times we're like, what just happened here? In fact, the other day, Adele went through a huge spike and we're like, was there some Adele scandal? What was going on? But just,
wow.
21 was released on a couple different platforms and suddenly it's getting discovered by a whole new group of people.
Crazy. Well, it's to a music lover and somebody who spends a great deal of time using online music services. I think it's fascinating.
Yeah.
So
it's easy to get lost and be very, voyeuristic in what's going on and who's sharing
what. That's part of the interest.